You know that thing that just gets to you? That area in your life where over and over you just fail, or you just seem to lose your own composure? It could be someone just talking to you and saying a certain thing, and you just can't help but seem to take the bait every single time. It's those places where we protect, and it's those areas that we really want to deny that they exist, that within us are the most weak, and they're the most susceptible to threat. Many times those spaces are called or known as privileged fragility. Today's podcast explores fragility. What is it? How does it manifest? And what can we do about it to become a better human being? Hey, so welcome back to the Inclusive Activism Podcast. It's official. We've launched. How exciting. We have two voicemails, which I don't know how to play yet. So the community is actually starting. And at this moment in time, we have hit a brief spike that might actually fall and get a little bit further down. But we have had, at this point, dozens of listeners. I mean, literally dozens of listeners. I can't tell you excited how proud I am. And I just appreciate the fact that you're tuning in. And the folks that are calling in, I really appreciate. I'm hoping we can have more callers in the future, too. The reason I share this with you is because all good things start as small and fragile, tiny things. But do not underestimate the ability for a small group of people to make a large difference in the world. So while this might not be the best that it gets for right now, I'm excited to see it. So if you're listening right now, thank you so much. You're on the ground floor of something. You're at the beginning of something, and I'm committed to seeing this through for a while. So thank you so much, because I am not going to do this alone. I need you all, and I need this listener base to create a community for me so I can find a better way of how being an ally, how being an active and inclusive person makes you, in fact, inside a better person. Checking in from what I've been doing as far as activism specifically since the last time I podcasted. We are all in the process, right? And without being active in the community, we passively allow the active oppression to exist within our midst. So since then, I have presented at the National Collegiate Leadership Conference about the limiting effects of performativity within gender roles and how we do them in relationships, which is a blast. This is the first place I told people about my podcast. I'm kind of excited to think that maybe someone in that room is listening to this podcast right now. So that was fantastic. I've met and had dinner with more activist friends who are willing to get arrested for their own important causes. Not their own important causes, for community important causes. I met with other adjunct faculty, and I taught them how to better engage their own student populations. I attended a non-violence direct action training with other folks that are getting arrested for good causes, which I appreciate. I've held a civil conversation series about the film 13th, and about 27 people showed up at PVCC, and we analyzed the intersection of race and mass incarceration, which has been the theme for the year. I really appreciated folks that came to that. I was able to get invited to and speak at a Black Men in Education panel conference, and it was about how to be better allies for Black men, and specifically how to be better allies for Black men in the area of education. And lastly, I've done two different Emerging Leaders retreats. I did Emerging Leaders 1 at Mingus Mountain Camp, and I did Emerging Leaders 2 in Sedona, where that focused around nonviolence and how to be nonviolent in your heart, as well as making nonviolent change within the world. So that was some of the stuff that I've been up to. So as far as self-care, I've kept up with lifting 4 times a week. My cardio did dip to like 2 to 3 times a week within the past couple weeks, so I need to kind of get back on top of things today. I also did legs, and I did about 27 minutes of cardio, so I'm starting the week off really well. My mindfulness is about 4 times a week. I need to make sure I take care of that today, but sitting, trying to slow down, trying to get control over my thoughts and just be in the present moment is a constant battle for me, but I'm doing it. And as far as my hashtag tripod, I don't know if you know what this is. Hashtag tripod is a way to spread the information and value of podcasts to other folks. So I will be sharing that both on Facebook as well as in podcasts here. But the podcast that I recommend this week is on allyship through NPR's Code Switch podcast. So I will put the podcast in the show notes. So if you're curious about that, you can learn a little bit more about that as well. And then last but not least, I've installed a couple of different microphones. I'm hoping that helps with the interviews specifically. Sarah's having a really hard time with the interviews because I am not recording them very well. So I got some boom arms and I got another microphone, and I'm hoping to get more constant levels out of that and also make her life a little bit easier. I'm also trying to really be mindful of my vocal pauses. So I'm hoping I'm doing a better job at that, but I'm also trying to edit in the process. So the office is looking a lot more like a podcast studio, and it's kind of cool to see things come along. Now that all that's been said and done, on to the topic of fragility. Now, most of the time, this is framed as white fragility specifically, but in my estimation, I don't want to talk about white fragility specifically. I honestly think that when we're talking about fragility specifically, it comes in all forms of privileged identity, and all forms of privileged identity would be subject to some form of fragility threat. So first off, let's define fragility. Fragility is a state in which even a minimum amount of racial, paternal, class, or privilege-based stress becomes intolerable, triggering a range of defensive moves. These moves include the outward display of emotions such as anger, fear, guilt, and behaviors such as argumentation, silence, or leaving the stress-inducing situation. So I want to make sure that I cite my sources, and this has actually been coined by author Dr. Robin DiAngelo. She came up with the white fragility term, and according to DiAngelo, most white people live in a social environment that insulates them from race-based stress, due in part to their privilege and being part of what is considered the cultural majority. In turn, says DiAngelo, whites are infrequently challenged and have less tolerance to race-based stress, causing them to become hostile, guilty, defensive, or fearful when confronted with race-based stress. This phenomenon is defined as white fragility. In the end, white fragility ensures conversations about race are derailed and that the status quo of white supremacy is upheld. Wow, that is a lot to take in, right? And that's the reason why I want to do a podcast about this specifically, because it's a lot to take in. And what do you do with that? Because it seems like there's not much to do with it. So of course, whenever we're going to talk about things, we always like to focus on Rowdy and his problems. So let's check out Rowdy and his own male fragility. For me, I am at threat to the limitation of my own male fragility when I am more concerned with the performance of my own masculinity than I am in engaging with my own humanness. For example, my niece loves me riding this little tiny train whenever I visit Wausau, Wisconsin. It's part of the Independence Day festival that happens there, and I literally have to cram myself into this little pink frilly train. And she loves it when I ride with her, but at times I'm not a fan of riding this thing. I have to muster the enthusiasm to like squeeze myself into this pink train, and I find myself kind of mocking myself or making fun of myself as I ride along in this thing. It's funny because I'm more concerned about how masculine I'm looking than how much of a good time I'm having with my niece. So that's a place where my male fragility can kind of come up. Like, I want to avoid that. I don't want to do that. I want to get off that train as quickly as possible. I try to kind of make fun of myself to limit that discomfort while I'm on that train ride. So male fragility is something that I struggle with too, in that even with my niece, who I love, I'm worried about looking masculine enough on this stupid little pink train. So I'm working on it too. In a study done with college-aged men, 18 to 65, they told me and my partner, really mostly me because I did those interviews just man-to-man, but men are expected to be stronger, braver, and less emotional than women. They are also expected to be all-knowing without asking for help, strong, unemotional, honorable, fair, dominant, which I will get into at another time, chivalrous, and never afraid. To be in this way, men are expected to be superhuman, which also means not being in touch with one's own humanity. So when I can you know, as woke as I am, can still get a little bit threatened when being put in a conversation where I have to talk about the patriarchy, I'm experiencing that fragility. Or when I'm the only man in the room and I'm listening to women talk about sexism and I feel this need to kind of talk on behalf of men, that's good old male fragility rearing its ugly head and wanting me to keep things the way that they are and avoid the reality of the conversation that I'm in. So that, in a nutshell, is kind of how I'm terming fragility and kind of what that means. So if you need any help with more of what that means, call in and we'll try to find a better way to explain that for all y'all. Secondly, how does this manifest? I believe we all think we're really good people. We like to think of ourselves as good people. But when we have fragility experiences, is because we are noticing that we have a privilege that other people don't have. And these unearned benefits that are just given to us just make us feel weird inside. We don't like the way that it feels getting this unearned privilege. And the fact that it makes us feel weird inside, this form of dissonance, makes us kind of experience this fear that makes us push back on this notion that we have this privilege and that attacks our identity as a good person. So when we are uncertain or threatened about being confronted with our unearned privileged benefits, we feel this like disconnect between what we got for free without asking, which also in turn means other don't get for no really good reason, and it threatens our own view of us as a good person in the world. Does being privileged mean you're a bad person? Of course not. We all would be bad people then, because we're all privileged in some way. It means you have a responsibility to use those unearned benefits on behalf of those without them. So as a man, it's making sure that women have equal access to healthcare and advocating for that and being willing to pay higher insurance premiums because I don't have to worry about birth control or I'll never need to worry about mammograms or cervical exams. These are things that are not part of my day-to-day life. So as a man, I need to make sure that I'm willing to pay more to make sure that women's healthcare costs are greater subsidized. I don't need to buy things for periods, or I don't need to get checkups every year just to get on the birth control pill so I can get my prescription for another year. I don't need those things, but I should pay more, and I should also understand that women need them. And so I need to work with my privileged identity to help sure women get these things that they need by using my male privilege on their behalf. It also means when it was International Women's Day, I didn't go to work that day because I wanted people to understand the pain of a day without a woman. And even though I'm not a woman and I don't have the same type of problem women have, I need to stand up with my male privilege and say, hey, I'm going to be willing to get less free stuff because I'm overvalued in order to create equity. But what can happen is that sneaky old fragility will make me lash out or fight back or get defensive when topics come up related to male privilege. The things I get are not my personal fault and I didn't ask for those things, but the feeling of dissonance and that probable feeling of threat from me losing my dominant seat at the table makes me feel a little funky inside and makes me want to get downright defensive to the point of being offensive. Thirdly, lastly, and finally, what do we do about it? First off, we have to embrace this idea that fragility exists and it affects us. If we want to talk about a form of fragility that I'm really uncomfortable with, we'd be talking about my passing privilege. I, in my life, get to be seen and trusted as though I am white because as it stands now, I don't get as brown as I used to be because I'm not in the sun as much as I used to be. And the fact that I've lost all this luxurious black hair on top of my head tends to lighten my overall complexion, so I don't look as dark as I did once when I was a kid. But I am not white, and getting to pass for white means I get benefits that I really don't like to look at, but I really, really need to. I'm just heard differently, and the fact that I have had these marginalized experiences in my background and I'm seen and heard differently means that I need to speak up more. Now, given that I've had this experience with being marginalized due to my racial identity means that people will hear me differently, and in their mind's eye, they see me differently. So when I say Black Lives Matter, it's heard differently because I could be seen as white and because I am obviously not black. So there's that responsibility to notice that fragility is going to keep me from being in those spaces. Like, I'll think that's not my issue, or perhaps they don't want me there, or maybe I'm not dark enough to be around. But that is not the case. And I really need to recognize that fragility is going to want to make me lash out or push back or check out. Otherwise, I lose the opportunity to create community because I don't get up off my ass and do anything about it. The other thing that's really unfortunate is that fragility threat keeps me from doing the hard inward work that I need to do in order to be serving my community. So when I do allow that wild and defensive fragility loose, I am allowing myself to remain disconnected to my community because they cannot connect with me due to my unwilling to divest myself in whatever way possible from the privilege that I have, as well as using that privilege to advocate on behalf of others. I got this really wonderful piece from First Corinthians Baptist Church as well. Tripod, go to First Corinthians Baptist Church in Harlem, New York, and listen to this one. It was fantastic. It came from Reverend Dr. Michael Eric Dyson from the sermon When the Church Prays, #tripod. So he says, in regards to the example of affirmative action, I will get the preference for certain jobs, promotions, and higher positions simply because I have a male identity, which means I might not be the best person for the job, I might just be the best man for the job. You see how I don't have to compete as much because I only have to compete against other men and not against trans folks, women, and other folks that identify as intersex. I only have to compete against men, which make my life a lot easier. But, and here's what's important, that coddling prevents me from actually competing against the best. A great example of this is Babe Ruth is considered the all-time home run leader because, well, let's be real, it's because he was the best white player in his area. He wasn't playing against black folks. He wasn't playing against Dominicans. He wasn't playing against Hispanics. He was playing only against other white people. And so when we think of him as a home run leader, we should really think of him as the home run leader against whites at the time. We also live in an era where the first black player in the NBA just died this last week. So I don't know that Michael Jordan or LeBron James are just getting in right now due to affirmative action. I actually think they just might be the best. And before, the best were excluded, and it was only the best of this small group that we let in. And in regards to Babe Ruth, history tells us that there was a man in the Negro Leagues that hit like something like 890 home runs. Now, despite what history tells you, the Negro Leagues were not made up of inferior players. These players were not folks that the Major League Baseball wanted to let in because they didn't want the competition. Honestly, it wasn't until the Negro Leagues started making more money, until all that money stayed in black hands, that the Baseball League really wanted to start including blacks into Major League Baseball. They did it because the Negro Leagues represented a threat to their institution. They were losing audience members, they were starting to get more coverage as far as media, and Major League Baseball wanted to stay on top. So they only let more folks in when they were at threat of losing their seat at the table. Now, we live in a world where we're raised to think that we've earned certain things through merit, but that's not always the case. Sometimes, like me with my maleness, I need to recognize as a male, I was born on third base, but sometimes I stand there and I act like I hit a triple. But I gotta be honest, third base was handed to me, and I didn't do anything to earn that. I'm on third base and I have to recognize I was just given that thing, and other women have to earn their way to third base just to get to the same space I'm at. And not having to compete with everyone or living a life where I was just handed more means that I am actually less because I have not had to overcome as much, and by not being strong enough to confront my own fragility means that I intentionally choose weakness instead of confronting the fact that I was just given these things. I choose to be less than. I choose to be less fully developed in strength as well as full humanity when I engage in fragility. In some ways, I feel like having privilege is a way of being an underdeveloped human. That privilege is a form of unnecessary coddling that I can feel will make me into an underdeveloped person. Now, I understand this is a pretty radical idea, but when you look at what other folks have had to overcome and live and survive through just to get into the same room as you that you were born into, means that we got to recognize that we didn't have to go through those things, which means we're probably not as strong or resilient as them. That's a fact, and we got to look at those things, especially if we want to be our best selves. So that means, personally, I have no doubts that as a male, that when I engage with notions of traditional masculinity or hypermasculinity, I am choosing to be less than full human. A full human is more than just strength, non-emotion, breadwinner, stoic, and all-knowing without asking. Full humans are strong by embracing times of weakness and being willing to confront their vulnerability. Full humans experience emotions that are not just anger and happiness. Full humans are happy that their partner can provide for the family unit. That's what it means to be a full human. A full human is to embrace the good parts and bad parts of humanity, whereas masculinity just avoids those things and shoots for Superman every single time, which means you will constantly fail and fall short of that mark. I think I want to be more than just a good man. I want to be a good human, right? And so I need to notice where I'm falling into those patterns, or that my male fragility will push me away from notions that will help make me become a better person. So the three walkaways from today are: 1, privilege fragility is a thing, and that areas of privilege, we are all subject to this form of weak defensiveness, and that yes, even Rowdy has his moments of fragility. Unfortunately, I have those moments of fragility quite a bit, quite often, and I need to stop, especially when I'm having fragility. I need friends around me that are willing to be calm and patient, because I, the petulant little baby that I am in those moments, need to be asked, hey, do you think you might be experiencing fragility right now? That check is an opportunity for me to get better. And I appreciate the people in my life that are willing to check me, to slow down, to help me notice that this is fragility, and then I'm just kicking and thrashing because I don't like that dissonance. It helps me realize that this thing's happening. Secondly, this thing manifests within our privileged identities. In this form of defensiveness about the existence or the effects of our privilege results on other people, this is when those things come out. When we notice that our privilege is affecting someone else, or someone else starts talking about, hey, it's kind of nice you get this privilege thing and I don't get it, we get defensive because it is an attack on our ego and our sense of self as a good person. Secondly, we got to address it. For us to be in community, we have to have the ability to confront the true ugliness in ourselves. It is time for us to evolve as human beings. And this fragility threat is a way of avoiding that weakness, or avoiding that place where we have privilege and the power to make a difference. This fragility threat is a problem, and it keeps us from creating community. It also keeps us in that weak, coddled infancy space of humanity. Because if you've ever done the privilege walk and you're at the front of the room, you got some stuff that was given to you. And because that stuff was given to you, you're not as strong as the folks in the back. We need to recognize we're not as strong as the folks in the back. We need to rely on those folks in the back. We need to help those folks in the back in the areas that they didn't just have those things handed to them, because they were strong enough to be alive. When we do privilege walk, there's people in the back of the room that aren't there that we don't see because they didn't survive to make it. It's just that rough out there. And we live in an area where the people at the front of the room complain the most because they don't like the way it feels to notice the struggle of the folks in the back. That's super important. So that's why that privilege notion is so critical for us to notice and engage with. It's ugly, and trust me, I'm sure I'm going to lose some listeners when I talk about fragility specifically, but it's nothing personal. It's just a fact. It's a part of the human existence. So when we see it, we got to call it out. And not just call it out, call the people in. Recognize that when someone's engaging in their own fragility, that you engage in your own fragility, and you're not perfect with your fragility either. Notice that it's happening and gently talk with them and try to correct them. Some folks you'll never want to talk to or won't want to engage in that stuff, right? But that's the 14%. That's that people we really don't want to focus on because they aren't interested in change anyway. When it comes to our community or people that are in the process of trying to get better, those are the folks that we explain that stuff to. That's where we talk about fragility. So if you're having a hard time telling people about fragility, be like, hey, would you please listen to the Inclusive Activism podcast? They do a whole half an hour on fragility specifically. And hopefully it'll help them see that in a different way. If not, they can call me super pissed off and I'll try to respond to their voicemail and see if I can't do better on the next take. And with that, that is my time on the podcast about fragility. So we have voicemails, but I don't know how to capture the audio just yet. So when my producer, who is a full-time student, a full-time mother of two, and a wife to her beautiful husband, who's also out of the town in the Azores in Europe, gets a chance to show me how to do this thing, I will get to you, but we're going to give her the space and understanding that I don't know how to pay these voicemails yet because she has a lot to do and a lot going on. But when I learn how to capture that audio, I'm going to play those voicemails and I'm hoping I get to hear more voicemails in the next one. So if this podcast made you think of something or you have a question that I can answer a little bit more about fragility, or if you're super pissed because this fragility conversation made you experience fragility and you're like, damn it, Rowdy, I don't like that, then you can call me at 860-576-9393. Again, you can call me at 860-576-9393. That's that place where, again, we come into community, where we can ask questions, where you can talk about scenarios of things, or react to how situations related to topics develop in real time. And again, depending on how good your stuff is, I may play it and give it my first taped response, or if it's something you really want to know more about, we'll make it a future podcast. And lastly, as always, if you're interested in booking me and the power of inclusive activism to your organization, you can always do so at inclusiveactivism@cox.net. That's inclusiveactivism@cox.net. And if you want to learn more about this organization, my producer, what we're about and what we're attempting to do, you can do so at www.inclusiveactivism.com. That website again is www.inclusiveactivism.com. And again, this has been Rowdy. I'm super excited. It's been great. I love the fact that folks are listening. It seems like people might have been sharing this. I've had some folks reach out and text me, which has been really cool. The two voicemails are awesome, and I'll make sure I find a way to capture them in the next podcast. But I'm really looking forward to hearing from you all, and this community idea just gets me so excited. So I love the fact that we're going to be able to talk about this, learn from one another, and no matter where we are in the world, we're going to have the ability to talk and learn about how diversity and inclusion, at the end of the day, makes us a better person. And as long as we're willing to do the internal work necessary, we're going to be in this process of self-discovery and learning a little bit more about ourselves and others. And hopefully we'll find some purpose. I was listening to a podcast the other day that said happiness is this illusory idea that we're always chasing. And that once we have a sense of what our purpose is, that's where happiness comes in. So stop trying to find happiness and maybe try to find some purpose. Get out there and make a difference for someone else. And we can make the world a little bit of a better place at the same time. Thank you very much for listening. And I can't wait to get back to you again. And I can't wait to hear from more of you about this whole fragility concept. Thank you. We'll be right back.